form of a question is a Christian environmentalist. And tonight's session will be a little bit different from the things that I've been doing on the local geology. Instead of talking about facts, if you will, about the local environment and then entertaining questions after I finish, I think tonight I will be asking a list of questions and then asking your help in kind of struggling with the answers to those questions. Because of this kind of format, I want to start by telling you a little bit about myself and my particular perspective on these issues. I am a geographer, primarily by training, with some geology background as well. Geographers study the Earth. They study the natural features of the Earth, and they study the human features of the Earth. And geography at its very best tries to take those two aspects, the natural science and the social science, and put them together in a holistic understanding of how people and their environment interrelate, both the way that the environment affects people and the way that people affect the environment. As a geographer, I'm trained as a scientist. Science is a particular way of looking at the world, a particular way of asking questions about the world. It's not the only perspective, and it may not be ultimately the best perspective, but it is one way of asking questions, of seeking knowledge about the world. My personal interest is in environmental change, the causes of environmental change, both natural environmental changes, quote unquote, and human-induced environmental changes. Much of our contemporary concern for the environment and the environmentalist movement comes out of scientific studies of the environment, how natural systems work, how people affect those natural systems. And science confronts us with the implications of our actions on the Earth. People cannot live on this Earth, cannot move about in the environment without affecting the environment. Virtually everything that we do and everything that people have done throughout history has had some effect on the environment. Therefore, our actions must be genuine choices. And as soon as we get into the realm of making choices about what we will do in the environment and what we will do to the environment, those choices are not necessarily scientific choices, but cross over into the realm of moral choices or ethical choices. And this is where any pretense I have as an expert ends, and I tiptoe out into the shaky ground of looking at moral and ethical issues. Now, when we consider an ethical stance with respect to the environment, the Bible is not always very helpful, not always very explicit about how we as Christian people should treat the environment. And therefore, we must struggle as a people, as a believing community, with what exactly the Bible and our Christian traditions mean for the way that we live in the environment and the way that we treat the environment. Now, the roots of my questions tonight date back to an article that was published in 1967 by a historian named Lynn White Jr. This article is now kind of considered a classic in environmentalist literature, was entitled The Historical Roots of Our Ecological Crisis. And according to White, the roots of our environmental troubles are largely religious. That our religious heritage gives us a certain arrogance toward nature, and we treat the natural environment, therefore, with a certain amount of arrogance. Allow me a brief quote here from his article. The present increasing disruption of the global environment is a product of a dynamic technology and science which were originating in the Western medieval world. Their growth cannot be understood historically apart from distinctive attitudes toward nature, which are deeply grounded in Christian dogma. So that White is looking at our attitudes toward nature as they come out of a Christian tradition, and saying that there are problems with those attitudes toward nature. According to White, the way we treat the environment, the way we think about ecology, is shaped by our perception of the relationship between people and their environment. So what is our perception of that human-environment relationship? According to White, the model of human-environment relationships that we have in the Bible is one of dominance over creation. I'll write that quickly. That dominance expressed in the creation story of Genesis 1 and 2, where people are given dominion over the creation to subdue it, to use it for their will. It's expressed also in Psalm 8 in the language of what are people that thou art mindful of them, yet who have made them little lower than the angels, put all creation under their feet. That type of language of people being in a dominant position over nature. And according to White, this creates a dualism, a separation between people and the world, with people transcending nature, above nature, dominating nature. And according to White, science itself comes out of a tradition of natural theology, of looking at the environment, looking at nature to understand the mind of God. So that science itself is part of this religious tradition of thinking of ourselves as dominant over creation. Now, needless to say, when that article came out in 1967, it caused a lot of controversy. To say that Christianity is at least partially responsible for our ecological crisis got a lot of people up in arms, got a lot of people disturbed. And there were many critics of White's article, many who said that his analysis was simply too simplistic, that to say people are dominant over nature is not to give the Bible a fair reading. But there are some other aspects of Christianity that I think contribute to our kind of separation or our ongoing struggle with how to live in the natural environment. And it's those kinds of other aspects of the Christian tradition that I want to struggle with just a little bit together tonight. One book that has helped me to articulate these other aspects is called Imaging God, Dominion as Stewardship by Douglas John Hall. And this is available in the bookstore across the way. And let me begin with a quote from this book. Given our past, it does not become Christians to rush in with righteous indignation, accusing the technologists and entrepreneurs and industrialists of careless and rapacious ways. It would be better for us to begin in the spirit of self-examination. There are many ways in which Christians have contributed to the manifold crisis of our planetary environment. In keeping with my warning in the introduction, I am referring here not only to Christian behavior with respect to the natural order, which seems barely distinguishable from other sorts of human behavior in the Western world. I am suggesting that we have contributed to the crisis of the biosphere through what we believe, not only what we have done. It is with this belief itself that critical theology must begin. The problems of the biosphere are effects. We are looking for causes. Theology has always known that the search for causes, if it is earnest, regularly conducts one into the very heart of one's belief system, so that we are confronted with self-examination. To continue the quote, the logic of our situation as Christians in the first world today is not difficult to understand, however difficult it may be to accept. We belong to a civilization whose dreams and deeds have produced widespread industrial pollution, rampant abuse of ecosystems, the depletion of vital resources, appalling waste, the demise of countless species of plants and animals, incipient destruction of the ozone layer, and much more. Civilizations are spun out of visions, world views, images of the human, and these are always in some measure the product of religion. World views that are the product of religion. Again, we come back to this notion of how we think about our relationship to the world, to the natural environment, and how that understanding of our relationship to the environment affects the way we treat the environment. Let me list some other parts of our Christian tradition, some other pieces of our Christian tradition that I think sometimes get in the way of an effective relationship between people and the environment. Many of these are listed in Paul's book. Some of them are not. The first aspect of the Christian tradition I might suggest is problematic is something I would call a disdain for the world. We think of the world as evil, as dark, as undesirable, as sinful. If someone is worldly, then they're not spiritual. Spiritual versus things that are worldly or physical or material or bodily, those are bad things. Anything associated with the world is evil. And we are to be removed, not conformed to the world. The notion of heaven as something that's away from the earth, that's not part of the earth, is some place that we go that is no longer part of this evil earth. The notion of an imminent return of the Lord, a second coming that may happen at any second now. An imminent second coming of Christ, which I think in some ways undermined throughout Christian history some concern for long-term effects of our actions. shortly after he was appointed Secretary of the Interior, James Watt was quoted as saying that we don't need to be concerned about the environment because Christ is going to be returning soon and then it's not going to matter. And that may or may not be true, but it does sort of embody that kind of short-term thinking, that we don't really have to worry about the long-term because Christ will come before then and everything will be fine. Along those same lines, the whole fundamentalist notion of a rapture, in which when Christ comes, he will take with him the believers and destroy the evil world, demolish the sinful world. Another part of our Christian tradition that has caused us problems, we might call the Greek influence, the notion of body and soul as something different from each other. And that the body, because it's earthly, is evil, and the soul is good and on a higher plane than the body and the worldly things. One other aspect of Christianity is the emphasis on our individual relationship with God, our individual salvation. Another aspect is what we might call confusion over control of the world. Who's in control here? Is it God or is it people? Who is really in control of the creation? Is it left to divine sovereignty or is it a matter of our human responsibility to take care of things? Also within our Christian tradition, we have what we might call an emphasis on the uniqueness of humans compared to the rest of creation. That humans are somehow, again, above the rest of creation, above the dumb animals, above the inferior races of people. So human uniqueness. Something else that continues to be part of our tradition is what I would call the notion of creation as an event. Creation as a single event rather than a continuing process. And along with this, we might add the fundamentalist notion of creationism, which we go by the account in Genesis of 6 days of creation. The world is 4,000 years old, according to that account. So fundamentalistic creationism would go along with that. Now together, these are all little pieces of our Christian tradition. One thing that both Hall and White say is that if you look at it closely, Christianity itself is not to blame for our environmental problems. After all of the analysis, Christianity itself is not wrong, we're not the source of the problem, but it is these little pieces of the Christian tradition that kind of circulate around in our culture. How can I best explain this? Much of our Western culture embodies these traditions rather loosely and uncritically. That if, according to Hall and according to White, if you look at the Bible carefully, there is within the scriptures a basis for sound human environment relationships. But when these little pieces of our Christian tradition are taken out of context and mixed up with normal human greed and selfishness, that these little pieces of the Christian tradition form a basis for thinking about the environment in a way that's not healthy or not accurate. Now, my concern is that if there are these pieces of our Christian tradition floating around, getting in the way of our relationship with the environment, then we need to think more carefully, and as a community, we need to talk more completely about what is our true biblical basis for an environmental ethic. If we're going to build an environmental ethic that helps us to sustain our civilization for as long as we need to, then what is the biblical basis for that ethical stance? And that's the question that I keep wrestling with over and over. If each of these things has been a source of problems, how can either we put these together effectively, or how can we find within the Bible and within our Christian tradition some basis for treating the world in a manner that will sustain the environment and sustain the natural ecosystems? That's the question that I would like your help with a little bit. And we'll just start, I think, the discussion there. Where do we begin building a responsible relationship to the environment as Christians? Where do we find that basis within our Christian tradition? Someone want to help me out with that a little?
I might make one comment.
Okay.
This thought came to my mind. I read it many years ago when Albert Schweitzer was in Africa. And one of his most important creeds was reverence for life. And when I ran across that, I wrote it, and then I rewrote it, and I read it, and I wrote it, and I read it, and I emblazoned it on my heart. So, many years ago, I was aware of his feeling, and he didn't even kill an ant. Killed nothing. So, there have been people coming from a Christian point of view, or from, you don't want to call him a Christian, call him what you want, he did have that feeling.
So,
he projected it, reverence for life. That does circulate around amongst us. It just wasn't as strong. It isn't as strong as he would.
So a reverence for all life, all living things.
All life. Reverence for life, which means life, not just peace or some here in America or a little bit over in Europe, life itself, every aspect.
Okay.
Good. Wasn't there one of the responses to Lynn White's essay, and an essay that was also very important, but I can't remember who wrote it, which argued that the tradition of St. Francis was an example of a Christian tradition that was very healing and good in terms of its relationship to the environment. And it seems like in in the spirituality of St. Francis, we have a tradition of recognizing the connectedness in a familial kind of way. You know, the whole theology or way of praying, brother, son, sister, moon, even to the verse of that hymn, "Thou most kind and gentle death." You know, so that in our prayer and in our liturgy, it seems like there could be ways in which we could reach a healthier. I mean, if you think about our liturgy now, it's very loaded with sin and redemption. I mean, and little of our liturgy really is conscious about our relationship to creation, within creation, and that whole area.
Mm-hmm. I think that's very true. And it was White himself who proposed Francis as the patron saint of ecologists.
Oh, it was.
That was his last line, and speaks as Francis as a radical model for a new kind of Christian environmentalism.
I think you alluded in the criticism of the articles to the fact that this criticism of Christianity's and how it's contributed to these things might not have been based on a true reading of what was there. And I think most of those things may be aspects of Christianity that have come in not so much in response to the true basis of it, but in service of the state over the years and various cultural aspects of our society. Individualism just stands out. I mean, you rather go write it in big letters and underscore, put the exclamation marks after it. That has nothing to do with Christianity. It's something that's developed in our society for all kinds of other reasons.
Right.
And I think the basis for the relationship to the environment is already there. We just have to go behind these things, find out how we got there, and get behind them.
Yeah, just a second. What I would say about this list of things, I think, is that they are things that separate people from the environment, that put us in an adverse position with the environment. If we take any of these things individually, any of these little pieces of the Christian tradition by themselves, they act as blocks or barriers between the way people in the environment interact. They get in the way of our effective thinking about the environment. And they are taken out of context,
yeah,
as you say.
I just thought of one way to maybe put that succinctly. Maybe you should be talking about traditional Christianity rather than the Christian tradition, because I think a good deal of this has nothing to do with the Christian tradition. However, it has a great deal to do with traditional Christianity.
How it's evolved.
Yeah.
Yeah. You had a question.
Well, you talked about building when you posed your question, what can we build on? And to me, the question of building begins with dominion.
Mm-hmm.
We have the Genesis account, we have been given dominion, which implies trusteeship, which is cosmic in scope. And dominion implies that we have trusteeship
and
stewardship.
Good. And what does the Bible tell us about being stewards then?
What does it tell us?
Yeah, if our model is not ruling over creation but being stewards of creation, then what is embodied in that? What do you think that means?
Well, to be a caretaker of it, to preserve it. I guess that's it. I don't have anything
to enhance. I think we need to enhance what we as much as possible. I think God expects that when he comes back and looks at it, he wants to see what we've done with it. And I think he expects it to be enhanced, that we did our best.
I don't know if dominion is the only translation that you can make. I'm not an expert on dominion as it was translated, and then as people read it, you know, dominion, control, the earth belongs to us to do with what we want. But when I think of stewardship, such a much nicer translation if it had been stewardship. It would have been so much easier. I think of, just as you think of stewardship through the church, you give back to God first what God has given us. You take care of the environment because he's given it to us to take care of. Not, I think the classic example of the differences in thinking is you take the Americas when the white man came here, and the violent destruction that they wreaked upon, you know, with this dominion as their, you know, that was their excuse. You know, they could kill all the buffalo, they could trap first, because they had dominion, and their thinking was to do what they want. Whereas really, when we think of stewardship, we need to think of giving back to God by caring, you know. Our first fruits should be to give back to him by caring about his creation. And, you know, I don't know how you turn that around, because I still think that now people use it just as they did when the white man first came to this country. It was a financial gain. It was, you know, people were buying furs for beaver hats, or people were buying, you know. And we still today, there's financial reasons why we don't want to, or why not we, but why certain people ethically ignore that and they don't want to turn it around. So I don't know how you overcome that.
I personally am looking at the concept of attitude to the replacement of all our resources, and how to gain and build attitudes within the individuals, because we are the ones responsible for the direction of whatever our utilizations are.
Their attitudes and how to improve their thinking of replacement of whatever they are using.
Can I say something?
Oh, sure.
Going along with what the gentleman has just said about attitude, I'm new to the state of Washington. I'm a visitor. I can't help but notice that the bees have to pollinate the fruit trees here. And I see that as an example of partnership with the environment. And we certainly shouldn't look at it as dominion over our lovely insect, the bees. He's our partner, and we're very dependent upon him. So if we could think about our attitudes, we see that in many cases we're very dependent upon our environment. Well, we're totally dependent on it, we just don't realize it. We have one here.
Yeah.
Are there any translations that say, instead of subdue the earth, is to tend the earth? I remember being here 25 years ago, and this was emphasized in reading the Genesis story. He always read that very tenderly, because you're the tender. And why haven't they ever come out with a translation like that? It makes sense to me. That's totally different than subject. And I think we also have to agree on some positive things here. We are very, and become, in the 20 years since that article was published, we've done a lot, and we're being called attention to it all the time. Now there's even a museum of trash in the country to show us our shame of what we're doing. They do this in the World's Fair in Seattle. The American exposition was a junk heap. And Russia brought over their most beautiful thing they had. We had the ugly, but we brought up people's attention. What are we doing?
Come on.
And I think those are the time. Holden is an excellent example of what we've been doing for a long time up here. Let's talk about our connection with the environment and experimentation with the solar fuel uses here, and when people are all hearing about what we're doing, the third level stuff from the mill and the mine here, we're hauling out tons of that. And things that get shipped in plastic here get sent back because they've been notified we don't want it shipped that way. And I think if we all speak out with that, and also assume responsibility individually, we wouldn't have to pick up anybody's trash. And I'm picking it up every day even here, but I think if anyone did it, we wouldn't have any. So it sort of starts with yourself.
It does. And I think you're exactly right that we
this article by White was written at the early stages of the kind of environmental awakening that began in the late 60s and through the 70s and has continued with some minor setbacks through the 80s. But we have so much momentum of history to try and overcome. And so many of these kinds of ideas of people above nature and people in dominion over nature have just woven themselves tightly into our whole culture. And it's, if one of the points that Hall makes that I really appreciate is that if we don't say anything about it, it gets so confusing at times, so overwhelming at times, that our response is just to be passive, not to do anything. And our passivity is, in that case, just contributing to the problem. As a Christian people, we need, like Holden Village does, to actively talk about how we live in the environment and let that conversation be the source of actions that will begin to create or begin to enhance the environment, to overcome some of the damage that's been done over the last thousands of years.
You know, this may not add anything to it, just kind of an intuitive response. And what I hear is pride. As I see pride as why it's the first deadly sin, is the fact that the view is always downward. You're not recognizing that there's someone larger than you are. And it seems like it's the element of pride that keeps us from being in one environment. We think that we, I guess your word of dominance, you know, that we are the dominant one.
Stance, yeah.
The view is from the top down.
One of the areas of scripture, I guess, that I'm wondering if might speak to the connectedness issue is the fact that we're called to live corporately. We're all called to live as part of the body of Christ. And for me, that doesn't have to be just with people. That can be with, you know, the whole creation.
We're called to be related
to
creation.
We're called to live in community with all creation.
There's a couple of things that can help us here at home kind of understand, and that is one, the whole of food philosophy. We can find out about why we're here, and also the way Holden treats its garbage as far as the garbology is concerned. I know that John's very willing to show anybody over what we do with our garbage here at any time, and that was a bit of an eye-opener to me when I went to my first garbology team, you know. I think anybody would be welcome to go with John any morning to work with our garbage. And there's a notice on the west, north end of the dining room describing the Holden food philosophy as far as eating low in the food chain. I know I found it very difficult to try and carry this outside into the unreal world. You know, I very soon popped into McDonald's for my hamburger.
Question? Now, just a comment about one of the things that you would really have to go back to is to try to, where we were back probably 15 minutes ago, is with the idea of trying to separate in people's minds what really is true Christianity, religion, different from our cultural Americanism as a religion. I go back to the idea of the religion of the manifest destiny. That's what we've lived under. But that idea that we were to come and to the North American continent and just subdue it. And there was always another ridge, there was always another creek, there was always going to be more. So why save anything? And that's been something that continues on in our society, to recognize that that's being separate from really from Christianity, but it's really the dominant theme that we live under. We don't really live in a Christian society. That'd be the first thing we have to recognize.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. But we the way we talk about our life in America, we wrap it up in Christian ideas and pieces of faith language. And I think your point about needing to get back into the true Christian tradition, the true faith that we are called to as believers, and really examine that critically and carefully on a regular basis and talk about it on a regular basis is such an important step for continuing this.
The question I have, I guess, is how do those pieces of Christian tradition that you've identified as problematic, how do those work or not work in terms of other countries' relationships with the environment? You know, they are problematic in other places in the world, or is it just an American problem?
Well, when White's article came out, one group of critics were people from other traditions that were saying, well, it's not just Western Christianity that's messed up the environment. Chinese, the Japanese, the people in Russia also have environmental problems and are not do not necessarily have a perfect relationship with their environment either.
Going back one, talk about how we culturally, and as you responded, that we culturally wrap in good sounding phrases what we do as a culture and call it Christian by wrapping it in the right kinds of words. The study that I have done in recent years that got me furthest into that question and opened more insights than any other into how we do this as a culture, how we wrap things that aren't really Christian in Christian phrases, was to study the rhetoric of hymns, particularly the rhetoric of hymns in the second half of the 19th century, and even going back a little bit before that. And on that note, I found it particularly ironic last evening when we had a service on hunger that we sang a hymn by Isaac Watts, which sounds lovely phrases, but really he was talking about the glory of spreading our empire until the sun never sets on it. Mm-hmm. And it was the very beginning in that of the kind of things that have caused many of the problems that the service is supposed to be talking about. So I think we really need to, while we're looking at inclusive language in our hymns, need to look at the whole issue of the rhetoric of our hymns, because some of them are really suspect.
You know, I find that I work with children, my profession, to do it, that you have to get really back to the concrete level with them and to help them to identify really why we do things, not just to go right up to the top right away with them, but to go back all the way with other traditions. Now, we're just not talking about this, but we're talking about holidays and things like that. You have to go back and really see why these things have come about. And it's eye-opening oftentimes for myself, too, to go back and to really see what has occurred in the past, what's the history, what has brought us to this point. And sometimes it doesn't make any sense at all to why we do things. It's going back to that, it's always been done that way kind of thing. And children are very good at asking the question, why? Why do we do it that way? Kids can't give them the answer. We've always done it that way. They want to make sense of it.
Other ideas?
I don't know, I guess if we're looking for solutions to the problems that we have, I'm thinking, one of the things I've been thinking as we have been here is how blessed I think my children are to have come and experienced Holden and to have maybe been made more globally aware, you know, at ages 10 and 13 than I was, you know, certainly at that age, of things like the Holden food philosophy and the garbology and styrofoam. And, you know, we did some talking today about what's bad about McDonald's. Kids were able to immediately put their finger about on you know, styrofoam and red meat and things that we've been talking about. So, to educate kids, there's a book in the bookstore called Parenting for Peace and Justice. certainly adults need
good.
To be educated as well. And
but no, I
kids
think,
are better at asking questions and getting at the truth, maybe,
and
than
that's
we are willing to do as adults.
So much of the future is there, too.
We talked a lot about some of the negative things in the Christian tradition, that, you know, things that separate us from our environment, but maybe we need to look a little more carefully at the Bible and find some counters to these things. Maybe there's something already in there that we've overlooked.
Well, I think that's right. I think we all need to kind of dig for that.
The Psalms that deal with creation and with taking care of our wonderful gift we can have. I don't remember which one, but I know there are some verses that point to the other side. They haven't been emphasized enough.
I think that we have within our Christian tradition certainly the resources to bring healing to this relationship between people and the environment. We have, if nothing else, the grace and forgiveness that will help us to begin to knit together our communities and to look more carefully at how we act within the environment. Before we close for Vespers, I'd like to conclude with some of the things that Douglas John Hall says about our relationship to the environment in this book. The list of problems really takes up chapter one, and then he spends the next four or five chapters talking about, well, if these are the problems, where is the potential for a good relationship with the environment? We start with the notion of people being in a position of dominance over creation, but as you suggested, we need to ask, what does dominance mean? And according to Hall, at least the way that I read him, remember that people are created in the image of God. And Hall's main point in the title of the book, Imaging God, suggests that part of our role in the world is to be that image of God in the world. That our dominance should be the dominance that God has. And for a model, Paul points us to God in the form of Jesus. How did Jesus exert his dominance? Well, the dominance of Christ was the dominance of a servant, not a king, but a servant who came and sacrificed for the creation. And if we take that Christ model as our model of dominance in this creation, then we are to be servants of the creation. We are to sacrifice for the creation. We are to act toward the environment the way that Christ acted on our behalf, and act not only for the environment but for all the other people who share this environment. So that, yes, we are called to a dominion, a special place, a special role within the creation, but that role within the creation is the role of servant. And you treat the environment much differently as a servant than as a tyrant, which has kind of been our pattern.
You put your finger on something too when you use the word sacrifice. I think, you know, for many people it's an economic issue, and we're not really willing to make the sacrifices that need to be made in order to preserve that environment. It's another way of sacrificial living.
That's very good.
It almost reminds you of the American Indian view of the environment, that they are a part of it, not over it, but a part of the environment. They are another being within all the other parts of the environment. And it's, to me, almost what you're saying. Well, worse we believe, I think.
Yeah. I was just thinking of our friend back there, too, was talking about our dependence on the bee. You know, it's a really very good concrete way of putting it. And I wonder what role what our role is then in creation. If we wouldn't perhaps find that better if we follow the path of real interdependence rather than a path of dominion.
I see my point when I pointed to the word individualism, which I think is the core of the whole thing.
See ourselves as a part of a larger community, and to see ourselves as one part of a very intricately connected creation.
In that sense, this individualism could be enhanced if each individual takes responsibility within their own dominion, their own sphere of influence, themselves, the immediate surroundings and people that they're involved with, to not continue to go on with the things that are wrong in all aspects, environmental and whatever, just to not participate so it won't be perpetrated further. Because it can't start by protesting if you're not acting according to what you're saying. So what it boils down to is just each one of us taking our personal responsibility to live a different way and live more in accord with what we see as the natural laws that need to be kept before we lose everything.
A lot of times the lines get fuzzy as to where our Christian obligations lie. One example is that we've been going through this thing in Oregon about the spotted owl and the old growth forest.
Mm-hmm.
It's very hard for me to decide I want that old growth forest there, and I don't want these people in the mills to lose their jobs. And they, you know, it gets really cloudy sometimes. It's very difficult.
Yes.
You know, my first reaction is, you know, don't cut another tree. Here's 400 people in one town whose mill is closed, who will be gone. Where, you know. This is where it gets really difficult to know where your Christian obligation lies, because you have an obligation to your fellow human being to preserve the world for them and for their generations, and also you have one to help them feed their family. You have it's a tough decision sometimes. It's a word you should stand.
It's extremely tough, particularly when when you begin to consider not only people in this country, but people in, say, poorer countries around the world, who are now perhaps trying to develop economically, but may find that effort constrained by the need to preserve the environment. How do you say, no, you can't develop because we can't have more pollution? Can you really tell them that?
Yeah, no, you can't clear that land to feed your family because we can't take out any more rainforest.
Right.
Where they're not even educated enough to know what you're talking about. They just want to feed their children, and that's where it gets really tough.
It's said that so many of our disposal, the dumps are being fulfilled with disposable diapers. Now in South Dakota, they're making a real disposable diaper out of corn.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Well, it's only going to get harder, I think, as you say. And we need to keep talking about it and keep working at it as a people. we've got to start on at least thinking about it. I don't pretend to even start to have the answers. It's a continuing struggle for me. I think it's a continuing struggle for our whole community. And I thank you for being willing to share your own thoughts about it. And hope that we can continue the conversation.
Thank you.
Thanks.